Hey, moms and dads, we're getting ready to have some conversations about things that have been in the news that may not be for your youngest kid's ears. So we just want to give you that heads up. It's nothing off the wall inappropriate, but just a little bit of adult conversation about topics in the news. In my 3 score years, I have never had a year like 2020. It definitely was the year that was. And that's what we're going to be talking today about on Life Talks. I'm Pastor Dan. I'm with Pastor Ben. We're the teaching pastors of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina, Metro Charlotte. And today we're going to kind of close out 2020 with a review of the biggest news for Christians from 2020.
Yes.
We could do a week of episodes on this and not even get started, couldn't we?
I think because 2020 has been so unique, the reason why we're doing this is because there's probably one of these stories we're going to talk about that have slipped through the cracks, in our consciousness to understand like the impact of some of these things that we're going to be talking about today. But yeah, it's been a year where, a lot of things have been tested in our lives, and we've talked about that personally, but what we're trying to do is with these episodes is make people aware of, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about COVID today, but there are bigger things or maybe farther reaching stories that maybe we missed out on because of COVID,
yeah,
right?
There are things on here that apart from COVID would have been number one, number
yes,
two, that,
yes.
that they're pretty far down the list. And you know, to prep for this, you and I both independently just sat down and came up
Wrote
with a
down,
list.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Would you say you had?
I had eight.
At eight, and I had 13 because I'm always more verbose. But I thought we would get a lot of duplicity or
doubling up.
Not duplicity. What is the word I'm looking for?
Well, anyway, you know, there's some duplicity amongst us.
Duplication. Duplication, that's what it is. But we would have a lot of duplication.
And there's some, but
there's
not
some,
a lot.
But not nearly as much as I expected to. So let's jump right into it.
Okay.
And let's go for the, you know, the 900-pound gorilla. It is the number one story in every aspect of life. Whether you're talking about politics, science, medicine, you know, anthropology, whatever, it is going to be COVID.
COVID,
so,
yeah.
So COVID has...
It's the 800-pound gorilla, absolutely.
It has absolutely changed church.
Yeah.
And we're not even finished.
Right.
Not only are we not finished with the pandemic, we're not finished with the implications of and the long-term impact. So what are some aspects that jump to mind for you in terms of the impact COVID has had on the church?
The first one that comes to mind is the battle of religious freedom and what COVID brought up. I mean, when everything hit in March, everyone was, you know, we need to shut everything down. And I think because most people didn't really know what we were dealing with.
Right.
Most people, I would say 95 plus percent of churches at some level shut their operations down. Some churches started reopening sooner rather than later. But for us, I think it was a solid 10 weeks that we took Sundays that were just purely virtual. But within the past year, what we have seen is certain government agencies, whether it's a state, citywide level, that have continued to restrict gathering of worship. And I think the COVID issues battling our religious freedom has been one of the major stories that maybe we haven't really had to deal with on a profound basis here in North Carolina. But it's happening all over the place. And there's been Supreme Court rulings, there's been local, you know, Ninth Circuit rulings. But the reality is, the issues that COVID has brought up is at what level is the government allowed to tell a worshiping gathering you cannot meet?
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of implications to that, because what constitutes an emergency for one person doesn't account for an emergency for others. So I think there's just this tension of what place does the government have in saying you cannot meet? And so there's been some friction. There's been some contention because of this issue.
Well, and I think the thing that also has been revealed in this and in other aspects of COVID is that even the church is not unified on this.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the church is not unified about anything COVID-related right now, without a question. But as it relates to the church's interaction with federal authority and state and local authority as to our constitutional right under the First Amendment, there's a lot of debate on this.
Absolutely.
And people feel pretty strongly about it. I mean, I've literally watched people who have made the decision that it is an overreach by government authority to say you can't meet or how you can meet, be attacked as earnestly and at times viciously by fellow believers, fellow church members, Christians, or whatever, as they have been by outside sources who would be critical of their decision.
Yeah.
And vice versa. We experienced it both because we closed for a while and then we reopened pretty quickly, more quickly than most churches. Yeah. And we felt it from both sides. It was like, you are irresponsible to be open, you are irresponsible to be closed. And the vehemence with which they expressed their viewpoint was at times a little startling.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I think the lack of consistent convictions has made the water so murky.
Yes.
What should we do in the midst of a pandemic? How much should we listen to government? How much should we not listen to government? And so the broad swath of opinions and convictions regarding this has led a lot of pastors and a lot of churches and a lot of Christians to say, what's our duty? What's our responsibility? What do we believe is the right thing to do? Hmm. And so I do think I probably lean more on the let's let churches, you know, let's let the individual make the decisions and be responsible. But I do think that's an ongoing conversation because what some people feel is the overreach of government restricting the free expression of worship is something that we need to keep an eye on.
We definitely do, and certainly, even the most cynical person can see that there have been edicts issued by government that are unprecedented in American history on this. Though there are other cases of pandemics. I mean, even Luther had to address this,
right?
During his day. But the question is, will this be a fluke in the span of history, or will this be something that is attempted again for other reasons? And we have to be very alert to
absolutely.
That because once abandoned, liberties are very hard to regain.
I think that's the biggest thing that we're just going to have to keep our eyes on. All right. What about you? What COVID-related church issue would you point out?
Yeah. Well, I think, there's so many. But the one that I can't get away from is just the level of division in the church and our inability to reach amicable agreement on a lot of things. Let's just kind of build off on whether to meet or not to meet. That obviously demonstrated itself very clearly with the wearing of masks.
Yeah.
Should we require that? And again, this goes more to individual freedom than it does to religious or worship, freedom of worship. Mm-hmm. But there are people who literally met people who believe putting a mask on is tantamount to receiving a 666 on your forehead. Mm-hmm. I've also seen others make the strong argument that not wearing a mask is the equivalent of saying, I hate my brother.
Yeah.
And I think both extremes are wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm a conservatarian, so I'm also I'm the kind of guy that believes make up your own mind, make your own decisions, and live your life independently before God and man. But it has created a level of dissension in the church that I think we do not understand what the long-term consequences of that will be. Yeah. I think we have now felt so free to express our opinions loudly and almost threateningly at times. My next question is, what other issues now are we going to feel that we have a voice whereupon we draw a line and dare you to cross it as it relates to other matters of church practice and polity and so forth? Which kind of brings me to another thing is I think the pandemic has revealed the shallowness of the evangelical church. Mm-hmm. We are more agitated about the wearing of masks than we are about sound doctrine.
Absolutely.
I think that's come out. I also think for many people, it has shown us that the commitment to regular church attendance and being part of church life was superficial at best. Now, I'm really tick some people off, and that's okay because that's one of my hobbies. But the bottom line is this: spare me your drama about not wanting to come to church for safety reasons when I see you out to eat, or I see you on social media at Dollywood, or at your kids' ball games without a mask, or I see you at Walmart without a mask. And so you can't come to church with a mask on, or maybe you won't come to church where they wear a mask, but you will wear one when you go out to eat.
Yeah.
And so forth. So, you know, just because you're absent doesn't mean that you're immune from spiritual hypocrisy.
Yeah.
You know, hypocrisy takes place outside of the church as well as inside the church. So, and so I think there needs to be a prophetic confrontation with the consciences of believers to say, does our behavior and what we claim to believe align?
Yeah.
And in many cases, it doesn't. So that would be another issue.
Yeah, I think the convictional Christian of, you know, and I get the idea of some people that are high risk trying to be as careful as possible.
Right. We're not talking about
We're talking about people that are there's really no risk involved or very little risk involved in and them still choosing to not engage with the fundamental Christian belief, the doctrinal belief that the gathering of the saints, the gathering of the people of God has been something that God expects of us.
Yeah.
And so it becomes, I think the whole virtual church has been something that's been a little crazy. All right. So I'm gonna bring up something that I think has been another issue that we need to talk about, and that is the transgender movement. Okay. I think this is a big story for a lot of reasons, and we have the church has been navigating the idea of the sexual expression and liberty movement, LGBTQ plus, and the religious freedom. I think we're seeing a continued ground lost on religious freedom issues. And this year, a number of things have really brought to my attention how we continue to lose ground to in not only in the public mind or the public square, but also as far as even legally our rights are being threatened. So when it comes to the transgender movement, back in June, I'm not sure if you heard of this, but J.K. Rowling, who's the author of the Harry Potter series. Now, she is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a conservative or a Christian, right?
Absolutely.
But she came out against this transgender movement because what she was seeing and hearing from people who have been through transgender surgeries was a lot of remorse, and there was an attack on young girls because before gender dysphoria, which was a condition.
It still is. I mean, that is a medically recognized condition.
Right, it's a medically recognized condition. Primarily, the far majority were young men. Well, all of a sudden, the last few years, they're seeing this ongoing trend. And there's even an author who wrote a book on this. Her name was Abigail Schreier. And she wrote this book called Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. And the movement of transgender thinking that's affecting middle school age girls is almost viral at some level. Mm-hmm. And so she came out again. And the moment she came out and saying, hey, you know, women's rights are at stake. Children are not able to understand these kinds of things. Immediate blow. I mean, you would have thought that she, you know, they try to cancel culture her.
Mm-hmm.
You have, so that's one issue. There's a tension going on between, you know, when does someone allow to make this decision? There's all kinds of science that's being suppressed in this whole issue. You add that to the Supreme Court decision, I think it's called Bostock versus Clayton County, that included transgender status to the 1964 Civil Rights
Right.
Act, which what that means is no institution can discriminate based on transgender identity. That has far-reaching implications for religious freedom and for churches and ministries that we don't know, but it doesn't look good.
We're one court case away from, which was one of the reasons why, and we'll talk about it later, the Barrett nomination was so important.
Yeah.
We've been one Supreme Court justice away from having all that turned on its ear.
Yeah.
And that will happen eventually, I'm confident. I want to go back to what you kind of said as it relates to the problem with middle school girls. I mean, I'm a former high school teacher. Anybody who's worked with adolescents, particularly young adolescents, understand that there is a peer pressure that comes with certain trends. And if you're old enough to have teenagers, you can look backwards and see, you know, in my day, you know, there was Valley Talk. Remember when all the girls had this?
Yeah.
There were, you know, the big poofy hairdos.
Yep.
Then there was was it when they binge and purge, and Karen Carpenter had it?
Bulimia.
Bulimia. Bulimia was a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And again, dominant among Christian or adolescent girls. Cutting mm-hmm. for a while was. Mm-hmm. We also know that suicide clusters exist mm-hmm. in schools. We've mm-hmm. actually even seen them locally before, that mm-hmm. where there's one, there's multiple. So there are these kids glom on to these trends because they're not mature.
They're not mature.
And so it becomes the cool thing to do and the experimentation that occurs. And this is what is going on right now. And there's already evidence coming out that says many people who make the decision to do, you know, go transgender regret it later on, and they have other mental illnesses that come with it. And nobody gets to talk about it. We can't talk about it because if you do, you're hate talk. And so we self-censor or we tolerate nonsense. And then we've got laws coming in to reinforce bad decision-making.
Yeah.
And it's just like this whole business of telling people how you can counsel that you can't yeah. give therapy to people yeah. who are trying to escape from homosexuality.
Yeah.
And in many states now that's moving on. So the problem with that is not only are we not having the conversation, but we're leading kids to permanent damage. There was a transgender activist last week who did an article that said doctors should be required to give hormone blocking
to all
kids so that they don't go into puberty until they can decide what gender they want to be, beyond the absolute absurdity of the scientific evidence. To, you know, they're like, follow the science. Well, you follow the science.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
There's a lot more science on this than there is
yes.
about climate change.
Yes.
And so, but beyond the absurdity of that, there are long-term implications that come when you give these kind of hormones to prepubescent yes. people. You know, if you're an adult and you got a mental illness and you chop off your genitals, okay, that's on you.
Yeah.
But when you're messing with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds, and this is common. There is this cool group of Generation Z and young millennial moms who think that they're somehow virtue signaling by saying, well, I'm just not going to force the gender on my child. Well, in doing that, they have no idea what the long-term ramifications,
right.
both related to health and mental health,
yeah.
Are going to have on their kids. And now we're just reinforcing with layer after layer of indoctrination on yeah. how we're to view this, not as the problem it is, but as if it were some kind of alternative acceptable lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that to me is, will the truth win? Because right now, what's fascinating to me is you're seeing voices that are not evangelical, that are not Christian, that
no.
are speaking out and saying there's something radically wrong because this ideology is ignoring truth, it's ignoring science, it's ignoring just basic biology, and yet, you know, there's these clashing systems, right? And so
the worldviews, yeah.
clashing worldviews. I think it's, you know, you mentioned there was a court case in England that just got decided upon where their Supreme Court said it was a person who went through the transgender transition as a preteen, and she comes out later, she's 23 years old, and she says, I did irreparable harm to myself. No one told me to wait. And so as a 23-year-old woman, she's saying, the people tried to encourage me before I was even able to make this decision. So now in England, you can't be 16 until you're able. I mean, they just passed that by their Supreme Court, their version of the Supreme Court. But it's interesting to see this ongoing battle. Like, we are going to continue to face the religion of sexual freedom
yeah.
versus the biblical worldview of gender and sexuality. And we've lost a lot of battles over the decades, and it's going to be really interesting. The thing that surprises me is how many voices outside of the church are joining at least some level of common sense mm-hmm. in some of these battles. But it's going to continue to happen. I mean, some states are trying to figure out, do we pass laws to not allow gender, you know, even if you're a trans-identifying girl, but you're a born male, can you participate in women's sports? There's states that are going,
and
I mean, they're debating that issue.
Destroy women's athletics.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, here's a point I want to make before we move on to our next one. And that is this, because having nearly 6 decades behind me, I've lived through enough and I've seen enough. And here's the reality. And we need to be aware of this as where we're at today and where we're heading tomorrow. The outlandish ideas and suggestions of our current generation at one time were theoretical suppositions of a previous
yes.
generation. And
yes.
this was the generation I grew up in, the 60s yeah. and 70s. In those days, to speak of abortion on demand, even for minor children living at home, was radical. Today it is common.
Mm.
Elimination of public expressions of faith in government would never have been heard of in the 40s and 50s, and they were outlawed in the 60s.
Mm.
Acceptance of transgenderism is the one. No-fault divorce was controversial at one time. Legalized recreational drug use was absolutely thought insane to even talk about it. Same-sex marriage, physician-assisted suicide, normalization of practices like cross-dressing or BDSM, gender dysphoria, dangerous, unhealthy sexual practices, which would be, and I'm, you know, hopefully grown-ups listen, it's anal mm-hmm. sex and, mm-hmm. and so forth as a norm. All of these things were considered to even discuss them in public. We're like, what kind of pervert are
right,
you? And now
right.
they're common, and it's all been approved under the guise of adult consent. Strategic abortions, where you can choose an abortion based on gender or birth defects or having too many babies. Nationalized retirement programs at one time were controversial. Then they gave us Social Security, and now it's moved us toward, you know, the idea of nationalized health insurance. Hate speech laws. Criminalization, elimination of therapeutic interventions for sexual deviancies, mm-hmm. like counseling someone out of that. So all of those things now are mainstream.
Yes.
In the 60s and 70s, they were controversial.
Yeah.
So look at what's controversial today. AI and virtual sexual experiences, decriminalization of prostitution, mandatory birth and population control, licensing of parents, throuples, which is recognizing
more
than a man and a wife, criminalization of some religious practices, elimination of most nonviolent criminal law enforcement happening already in our major cities, reduction of First and Second Amendment protections and rights, the elimination of the Electoral College, the overhaul of the U.S. Constitution from the ground, succession of states and abandon of federalism, change of status to the statehood for the district of Columbia, decriminalization of hard drugs already happening,
yes,
criminalization of tobacco usage moving in that direction, reduction of age of consent laws to 14,
yes.
12
yes.
and younger, voluntary and involuntary euthanasia, socialism, limitations of wealth and property ownership, mandatory education, mandatory enrollment in approved educational institutions, elimination of homeschooling, required vaccinations, universal health care, vaccinations in order to travel, mandatory personal green requirements, limitations of parental rights. All of these things we're talking about now in the theory are going to become the reality for our grandchildren if we don't get involved in the dialogue
yeah,
right away.
Yeah. So we are, yes. The wonderful point. We have to wake up and realize there's a movement, there's multiple movements attacking us. What is true, what is good, and unless we fight the fight, we're going to keep losing ground to these things.
So. Absolutely. Well, we blew through that. What did we do, three?
Three. And we got like
we got 20. So, well, that
we're so good at talking.
That's what I was Ben and I were talking about before we started this, you know, because we were fairly unscripted, as most of the time you can tell. But you know, we just like talking to each other, and we hope you like listening to us. And with that in mind, thanks for listening. We'll catch you
next time
on Life Talks.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a Ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.